Let's see what we can see tonight on these. We're on page 60. We've finished looking at how it works, the preamble. And now we're going to look at start on the third step and follow through in subsequent weeks through the rest of the directions for recovery. And we finished last week by looking, and we read at every meeting, the description of the alcoholic. You've heard that? The chapters, the agnostic and our personal ventures before and after we have the, we work the spiritual program and the changes as a result of that. They make clear three pertinent ideas. They hope they makes clear to you three pertinent ideas. You hear how it works every meeting and you hear these three pertinent ideas, but with that big book, in the context of the big book, it's, are these your three pertinent ideas that you're convinced of? And are you convinced that you're an alcoholic and what that means? They've talked to you about it, the big book. And are you convinced that you cannot manage your own life? And are you convinced that no human power can ever leave your alcoholism? And are you convinced that God can and will if you seek Him? And remember in the original manuscript it said, being convinced, we're now at step three. And if you're not convinced to this point, reread the book or throw it away. Because the next step, the third step, the decision we're going to make, you need to be convinced of these ideas when you get to the third step. And it's understood that. And so we read how it works at every meeting, but how it works is on page 58. The big book takes 57 pages of doctor's opinion to get us to be convinced from our experience. They tell us their experience. And then we see, is this our experience? Is it your experience that you are an alcoholic and what that means? What does that mean to you? Are you convinced you can't manage your own life? Are you convinced you no power can relieve it? And are you convinced from seeing things at the meetings that God can and will? You see Robert tonight. And Robert was where you may be now if you're starting, and Robert's 17 years. And so having those three ideas, it says, being convinced, I'm now at step three. And it says, which is that we're going to make a decision in step three, to turn my will, which is my thinking, and my life, which is my actions, over to God as I understand Him. It's going to still be my life and my actions, but they're going to be turned over to the care of God, to His guidance and direction. And to be able to turn it over to God's guidance and direction, I've got to let go of my life and my thinking and my way of acting. If not, it's nothing's going to change. God's not going to change me unless I permit Him to do that. We're accessing a power. We're putting up a mailbox, and we want God to deliver the mail. But if we don't have the mailbox, we're not going to get the mail. And so I'm going to make a decision now to turn this my thinking and my actions over to God. So they're going to say, what did we mean by that? Just what do we do? Well, that's a good question, right? And it says the first requirement, if you're going to make this decision, is that you have to be convinced that my life, and I like to read it in the first person. When we read it, if we read it and we say, well, we and them, but it's me. My life, run on my self-will, could hardly be a success. And so we're going to look at this handout tonight on self, which I've probably given out 150 times. Somebody's looked at it. I got this from the steps we took and from the Joe and Charlie handout. They put this together, the Joe and Charlie speakers, and it's part of their handout, and it's in the book, The Steps We Took, on the site in experiencethebigbook.org. When you go to the menu, it'll have resources on recovery, and you look at that, you'll see all these PDFs that Patty put in there, inventory, fear inventory, resentment inventory. All these handouts are in there that I've been giving out through the years. And so if you're following along and you're not at the meeting, go to that and pull out what makes self-will. And, you know, I didn't understand this, but this is, when I came in here, I knew there was something wrong with me, and there was something wrong with them. And my life was a mess, but I didn't know any of this. In fact, I didn't know this for years in recovery going to meetings till I listened to Joe and Charlie. And this information is actually in step four in the 12 and 12 by Bill Wilson when he wrote this in 1953. And he talks about the three instincts of life. And all human beings have three instincts of life. That's the deal. I have a social instinct, a security instinct, and a sex instinct. They're God-given. We all have them. And self is when I decide what I need to satisfy my instincts. And when I'm the one who creates a world in my head of how my social instinct should be about. Now, what does that mean? Well, when I was a kid, I had low self-esteem. And so I decided that if I wanted to get self-esteem, I had to make people like me. And I had to achieve things. Just being me didn't seem to be enough in my house. And so that created a sense of self that was probably not true. But I believed that, and that's how I was gonna make my social instinct work in that area. I wanted prestige because I thought that would give me approval and I'd feel better about myself. But I was the one that set the goals. How my pride, how either an excessive or unjustified opinion of myself, either positive or negative, I was the one who decided how I should be in that area. Nobody else told me that. And so I had these sets of beliefs, which are called old ideas, that I had before I ever drank, on how I should satisfy my social instinct. My ambitions were always to satisfy my self-esteem, so I would feel good about myself. And I was under this delusion, I didn't realize at the time, and society says it's a good one, but I was under the delusion that I'll be happy and I'll wrest satisfaction, happiness out of life if I manage the world well and I'll get a sense of self by being looked at okay out there. Well, let me tell you, that's exhausting. But that's the way it was. I wasn't good or bad. That's the way things look. My ambitions were all resolved about getting what I needed for security, my sex instinct, and to feel good about myself. And my feeling good about myself was in how other people saw me. It's pretty sad because if you make the world your higher power, you're really at a dangerous place. But I did it, and I know others have done it because our four steps are all the same. And so that was myself in my social instinct and my security instinct. I made a decision of what I would need materially to feel okay. Now, that changes too, because if you have poor self-esteem, your material goals change all the time because they're never satisfied. And then what I needed emotionally from people, and I tended to dominate or I was overly dependent. I never was right in balance. You know, and so my ambitions of when I needed to gain things or dominate depend on others. I decided what I would need so I would feel okay in that regard. And that's called self-will. Then in our sex lives, in our relationships, what did I decide I needed to satisfy my sex instinct? Now, none of these things are bad. It's just that somewhere along the way, I created a belief system on how these instincts should be fulfilled so I could be happy. And Chuck C. says in that new pair of glasses, the human ego is never satisfied. No matter what I got, it was never enough. Somebody said to me at a meeting, I have to laugh. I think it was the Wednesday meeting, and I was telling, you know, how, you know, screwed up I am. You know, we all are. We're alcoholics, right? And our thinking and this and that. So this lady comes to me, well, she says, well, you were such a successful doctor. How can you have problems? I said, listen, being a successful doctor didn't treat my alcoholism. You see, it wasn't enough. How do I treat this today? How do we change? I treat this today by trying to have God as my director and how God wants me to be in relationships, in security, in my sex instinct, my social instinct. I still have the instincts, but I will try to get them in balance with what God's will is for me and not Michael's. And so I didn't know any of this when I came in here. And this is what makes up self. And this is the disease. This is alcoholism. Alcohol has nothing to do with this, except that when I live on self, to do satisfy these things, I don't feel good. It's never enough. And then alcohol is my solution. Now when I'm trying to fulfill these instincts of life, and God's, and they're not going well, I see God as the solution. We talked about the sixth and seventh step on Wednesday, how I change my personality. I change how I see the world through God's eyes, not mine. And we're going to read why this is so relevant, because on page 63 it says, all I have to do if I want to have a good life, it's a contract. You don't have to look at it yet. But we're going to make a contract in the next few pages with God that I'm going to give God worry, and he's going to provide everything I need. All I have to do is stay close to him and play the role he assigns for me satisfying this. And so that was a real change, and this is what makes me an alcoholic. Now, if I live in self-will, and I'm trying to satisfy my emotions, my security, my sex instinct, then guess what? People don't satisfy in the way I want, and I get angry. Anybody relate to that? It's called resentment. So when I live on self, there are wrongs that are a manifestation of self. That's what we're going to read when we start the fourth step. And one of the wrongs is you get resentful, because if anybody isn't following your plan for how you want to satisfy your instincts or getting in the way, you're going to get angry at them. And I didn't know that. I just thought they were wrong or they did these things, but I didn't see. I was threatened all the time. Because when you're living in self, you're in constant fear that none of these things are going to go the way you want. Or if you get it, that they're going to take it away. Or that you did something bad to get them and they're going to find out. So when I live in self, I get fear, I get angry, and I harm people. So you see, this is the whole disease. Now, the treatment for this, before I came in here, was I tried to do better with self-will and manage better, and then alcohol would fix the feelings as a result of this. Now, when I'm back in self, I know, and I work the steps, the spiritual exercises, and then I get back to God, and then I'm not threatened anymore. And I'm not, don't have to have fear now. I don't have to be angry, stay in anger. And I certainly don't have to harm people anymore. So this is really, really powerful information, which is something that's not talked about a lot about at meetings, but this is what makes up our self-will. And if I don't change the way I see the vision of my will, nothing's going to change. So what's one of the things that's emphasized over and over again? It's in one of the steps. I have to have a vision of God's will for me in every activity. How does God want me to be? What he wants me to do? And I seek that vision, and during the day, I seek the vision of how he wants me to be in every situation. And some days I do better than others. So having that information, I hope it was helpful. We're going to say, being convinced, we're at step three. And the first requirement is that I have to be convinced that my life run on page 60 on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, if I'm living on myself, what Michael wants, I was always in collision with something or somebody. Anybody relate to that?
Yes.
Yeah. And it was always their fault, right? Of course. They didn't put that in there, but that's understood. And then here's a line that's a laugher. Even though my motives are good. Well, that's ridiculous. But that's with the alcoholic. I thought my motives were good. Did anybody else think they have good motives? We didn't know any different. I was at a meeting Friday. I was at Lori's study, and that's really good if you guys have time on 6 o'clock. But somebody was talking about how they couldn't forgive themselves. Well, I wasn't a bad person. I just had the wrong director. I was here deciding what I needed. I didn't know any better. And so when I did that and I directed my life, it didn't work. But now I don't have to direct my life now. And so God forgives me. I forgive myself. I don't want to live that way. And my motives were not good. My motives were all self-centered to get these things fulfilled. And he's going to give us examples of how this works. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. And we were talking before the meeting that he doesn't say alcoholics. He says most people, I would say almost all people, try to live by self-proportion. Our society says it's our goal, but we know that that's not true. Each person, every person, not just alcoholics, is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. Now, I read this for years, and I didn't see anything wrong with that. It makes sense to me. And then somebody says, well, the actor is not the director. The actor is just to play his role. So what I was doing, I was an actor in the world of life, the drama of life, but I thought I was supposed to direct everybody. And the other thing, mistake, was that I decided what my role was, and either it was they weren't letting me do my role or they didn't understand it. And it never worked for me. So an actor trying to run the show is in trouble. It says he's forever trying to arrange the lights. I tried to arrange everything, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in my own way. If my arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as I wished, the show would be great. Now, isn't that an alcoholic thought? If everybody did it, everything the way I wanted, the world would be great. The thing is, did you ever have a really good day? I had some good days. Everything seemed to work. It seemed to all come together. But it wasn't enough to make me feel okay. Remember, there's this powerful story in this book about Fred, who's very successful, right? He's the accountant. He's running the corporation, the family. Everybody loves him. He's perfect. He goes to Washington. He does the deal. He's great. His life's great. And so he goes into the bar, and then his mind says, I think I need a drink. And the example of that story is to show us that no matter how we arrange the world, the ballet, whatever, it's never going to be enough. And they give us three examples. They give us Fred, and they give us Jim, whose life was a complete mess. And he drank because he didn't enlarge his spiritual life. And so I'll never be able to arrange the world just right on my own so that I'll be okay. But you know, I feel okay today most of the time. And I feel okay just when I feel in connection with God. I feel like I'm serving God and others. And it's the greatest feeling. We talked about it yesterday. It said, everybody, including myself, will be pleased. Life would be wonderful if everybody did what I wanted. If you're in a relationship, if they did everything you wanted, wouldn't it be better? Of course. Well, forget that. And trying to make these arrangements. Well, here's the other thing. When you set goals on how other people should be, guess what you're setting yourself up for is resentment. You're setting up expectations of how the people should be in your life. And then you're getting upset at them because they're not behaving. But you know why? They don't have the script. They don't have the script I have for them. And then here's the other thing that's a real son of a bitch, is they have a script for me, and I don't even know what it is. And so we're in conflict with everybody and everything because we all have different scripts. And we read these powerful pages to wives and the family afterwards. And what they were trying to say there is we try to get our scripts together. We try to get the same goals, the things in balance. It says, in trying to make the arrangements, now here's what we do to get our way. I try to be virtuous. Anybody try that? Kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. Now when we do that, we're saying, oh, we're really great people. Look how we're going out of our way to help everybody. But you know what? We're just trying to get our way. Joe and Charlie said this brilliant thing. I had to listen to it twice because I wasn't sure I heard them right. But they said that they never did anything for anybody good, except if they weren't self-centered, it was by mistake. All of the things they tried to do in their whole life for everybody was always rooted in self. And sometimes they slipped and they actually tried to do something for somebody without seeking something for themselves. And think about that when you look at your four step. Considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. But if that doesn't work, here's what we do. We get mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. Anybody do that? That doesn't work well at all. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have various traits. So what usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. And when we came here, our show did not go well. It was not going well at all. And so what do I try to do? I think life doesn't treat me right. Anybody feel like that when they come in here? You know, oh my God, I tried so hard. They didn't understand me. Look what they did to me. Oh, my, it goes on and on and on. So what did I decide to do? I tried harder. I mean, we're trying our best to do something that's never going to work. and we try to exert ourselves more. I can become even still more demanding or gracious, and I can be demanding and gracious within the same 10 minutes. And as the case may be, and guess what? Still the play doesn't suit me. I don't think it's fair. And the best tape I've ever heard of Sandy Beach is where he talks about the 10th step, and it's from a conference in 2006. And he talks about, we live in a play where we have a role for ourselves. And we have this play where it's not fair that I have to be the butler when I should be the lead man. And that the whole world's watching this play where I'm assigned to be the butler, but I should be the leading man. And it's all in our head. Now, I don't know about you, but related a lot to our life. And you're never happy playing these roles. So he says, admitting he is somewhat at fault, did we ever do that? What's going on? Something. He is sure that other people are more to blame. Then he becomes angry. Anybody do that? Indignant, and then self-pity. So what is the basic trouble? Did anybody have this? Does this describe your personality? So he's going to say, what is our basic trouble? Then he's going to ask us a bunch of questions. It says, am I not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? So even when I was trying to be kind, I was still trying to get something for me. And here's the one that was for me. I was a victim of this delusion. And it was a delusion because it's something created in my mind that's not true, that I could wrest satisfaction, happiness out of this world if I only managed well. I think that describes my life. Maybe other people in this room can talk about it. We're going to get time to open it up because we're going to take several weeks on these pages. It's so powerful. Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? So our behavior creates patterns in our relationships with other people, and they seem to be retaliating to us, but what we do is set the ball rolling. Now, does that sound like the fourth step, where you look at those you're angry with, why you were angry, what did they do, and then when you look at your fourth column, your mistakes, how you may have triggered all of this actions by the other people? And it says, is he not even in his best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? I think what they mean by that is that if you're self-centered, like I was, they don't know where you're coming from. You may be kind at 9 o'clock and mean it, you know what, at 10 o'clock. And they don't know how to relate to you. They don't know how to make you happy. They don't know how to meet your needs because it can't be satisfied. So he says, our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He's like the retired businessman who rolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century. Politicians who are reformers who are all sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. The outlaw safecracker thinks society has wronged him. And the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, and our self-pity? Think about that. We have a disease of self-centeredness, a disease based on self. So what does he say in the next line? Selfishness, self-centeredness. You hear that a lot at the meetings, right? That we think is the root of our troubles. And so the root of all my troubles is my self-centeredness. And what it means is that I have a tree, and it's got branches, and it's planted. This is Michael's tree. This is my life. And this tree I planted in this soil, and it was fed by my self-centeredness. And that tree, when I came in here, was really ugly. It was full of resentment leaves and fear leaves and harm leaves. It was ugly. And what they're saying is, in AA, is we've planted our tree in a different soil, a God tree, then when you look at the branches, you're going to see love and patience and kindness and tolerance. And so our choice each day is, where is our tree going to be? What soil is our tree going to be planted in? And that's a decision we make all the time. It says on page 53, it says we make one choice, right? Is God everything or nothing? If God's nothing and I'm running the show, this tree's planted in the wrong soil. And if God's everything, then then I follow his vision of his will for me, and then the tree looks good. So that, they thought, is the root of our troubles. That's the root of my troubles. Now, here's another thing. I thought I was running my life. Did anybody think that? But the big book says you weren't running your life at all, ever. You were driven by your fear. So when I got in the car each morning and I fired up the engine, I had fear would drive me for a while. And then self-delusion would follow, drive me. And then self-seeking and self-pity. I was never really in control. My instincts of life were controlling me. And so I never had any peace. That's why we get irritable, restless, and discontented. Because we're driven by these things, and they're never satisfied. And driven by it, 100 forms of it, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. And so we live in a world where we create a lot of harm and we create a lot of situations where people do things and then we get angry at them, but we set the ball rolling. And it says, sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation. It may seem that way. And when you do your resentment inventory, you'll see this. And when you've done a lot of fourth and fifth steps with people and you've done your own, you see this. It's over and over again. But I invariably find that sometime in the past, I made a decision based on myself, how I was going to satisfy these instincts of life, which put me in a position to be hurt. And I think that's one of the most powerful things that I could see about my life when I did the fourth step. I could see how I made these decisions, and they were based on self, and then they led to these actions and the result and the harms I did. And I harmed them, and I harmed me. So it says, our troubles we think. So you're in the big book, you're on page 62. It takes 62 pages before they really tell you what's wrong with you. They tell you about the obsession of mind, but that's the result of being an alcoholic. They tell you about the allergy of the body. That's the result of being an alcoholic. But what makes us an alcoholic is that we're self-centered, and we live a life based on self-centeredness, and then that causes us to not feel good, and we're separated from God, and then we drink as a result. And so we have to treat this, if we're going to have any way of keeping from drinking, and we need to treat this if we want to have any kind of a life. And so we're on page 62, and we're reading this, and when you get to page 83, the promises that are read at every meeting, everybody loves those promises, right? They're good, but they're on page 83. When you come in here, you're in 62. And you have to do the rest of the steps, 4 through 9, to get to page 83 for those promises to come true. So how do you treat this? You're going to treat it by doing the directions in the rest of the book to get to page 83. And then to stay there so the promises continue to come true, you do steps 10 and 11 every day. And so it says, our troubles we think are basically of our own making. Does anybody like that line? Anybody think it's true? What's the greatest promise in the big book, some people say? Because if my troubles are my making, I can change me with God's help, but I can't change them. If my troubles are them or things out there, I can't fix that. But if the troubles are me and my personality and the way I see the world and the way I try to live my instincts of life, that could be changed. And that's what the steps try to do. They're going to change our personality so we don't make our troubles anymore. Now, if I have a bad day today, it's my fault. I can't blame anybody else. Remember, Joe and Charlie make the point, when you get to step 6 and 7, you can't blame anybody else for how you are. Are you working the steps? Are you letting go of your character defects? Are you asking God to direct you and change you? And it says, the troubles arise out of me. And now they talk about the alcoholic. They were talking about, it could be anybody, all people, but they arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. Now here's a great line, though he usually doesn't think so. Isn't that true? We're the last persons to see it. It's too bad we don't have a picture of our mind the day we come to our first meeting of all the crap in our heads that we absolutely believe. And then you can look year, 2, 5, 10 years later and see how it's changed. I can't remember my thinking 5, 10 years ago, but it's different today. We continually see things and let go of things and change our old ideas. And so they rise out of me, and I was an extreme example of self-will run riot. though I didn't usually think so. And it says above everything. Now, above everything is above everything. So above everything, and you ask somebody, you know, how important their recovery is, above everything, I must be rid of the selfishness. I can't live self-centered anymore and hope to recover from alcoholism. It's not possible. I must be rid of the selfishness. Here's the problem. And they also tell you why, because it's going to kill you. They don't mince any words here. These aren't suggestions. And it says, I must, or it's going to kill me. And here's the deal. God makes that possible. You may not like God. You may not like the idea of God or the name God. But there has to be a power greater than you can make that possible, or there's no hope for us. And so God is that which has all power to change. And I live on God's power, access to his power to change me. And there's often no way of getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore. Anybody have that? Anybody try harder? Every time I start a new job, I said, no, don't piss anybody off the first day. You know, try to make it a week, you know? Does anybody else think like that? Try to do better this time. Try not to react to everything. Try not to say the sarcastic remark. And you know what? I couldn't live it up to them, even though I would have liked to. I could not fix myself. I couldn't fix my personality so that everything worked. I just couldn't do it. And neither could I reduce my self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on my own power. I had to have God's help. And this is where you are if you're new. And if you've been in years and your life isn't going well, you don't feel well, things aren't going well, who's running your life? Is it you or God? Who's the center of your world? Are you working the steps? Are you doing the spiritual exercises? So the rest of the steps is how we get God's help. And so I want to end with that today. Then next Sunday, we're going to pick up with the how and why of it. And we're going to read the third step promises that are not read at any meeting. But they're really powerful. And then we're going to look at the third step prayer and what it actually says. So I'm going to open it up and...